Hi, Josh and Drew. My name's Louise and I'm from Suffolk, England, and I'm happy for you to use my name. I have a question around burnout. Josh, I remembered you mentioned previously that you were or are, apologies, I can't remember the current context, that you were a carer for somebody. I'm in a very similar situation myself, and I'm sure many of your listeners are as well. And we all know it's very emotionally draining and it's very stressful, and often our needs come secondary to the other person. My question is, or request for advice, I suppose, how can we make sure we're not entering that territory of burnout without then inwardly focusing constantly too much? I find that at the moment, when my stress levels are really high, I'm kind of inwardly focusing more and more, going, oh, you're not coping, you need to make sure you're coping, looking after yourself. And then I find that I'm doing that too much. But then I find I'm in a situation of where I'm then not maybe putting my own needs first. So any tips on how to find that balance? And that would be wonderful. All right, thank you very much. Bye.
And welcome to Disordered. This is episode 49. Today we're going to talk about burnout. I am Drew Linsalata, a therapist in training in New York State in the US of A, specializing in anxiety and anxiety disorders, an author, a podcaster, an educator in the anxiety disorder community, and a former sufferer of anxiety and depression for many years of my life, and one of the co-hosts of Disordered.
And I'm Joshua Fletcher, also known as Anxiety Josh on social media, an author of the upcoming book, And How Does It Make You Feel?, a podcaster, a content creator, a therapist, a 6'2" man with poor posture issues, previous sufferer of anxiety. I think my blood type's A. You get the point.
Who's your favorite band?
Oh, there's too many. Don't put me on the spot like that. There's too many. There's probably Fleetwood Mac if you had to.
Well, I wasn't expecting that. Okay, cool. We'll talk about that one other day. But we could have stopped at your blood type. That's fine. Anyway, today we're going to talk about burnout. And Josh's posture issues. But this was a great question to start, because I think burnout is a real thing, for sure. It contributes in our community in a big way. People who are dealing with anxiety disorders are certainly much less resilient and able to handle a lot of that stress. It's just they feel it more. So what is your experience with burnout?
Burnout's such a great question, and thank you for sending it in. Burnout is quite a vague, subjective term. But in the context of our community, yeah. So my anxiety disorder started through burnout. The question sender in her was right. I was a carer for a loved one and going to work and juggling 100 things. And yeah, it was difficult. And then that's how my anxiety disorder started. One day I just suddenly dissociated, never dissociated before, felt weird. This huge sense of doom and dread, and felt like I broke my brain because it was a result of that stress jug overflowing. Now, burnout can be seen in two ways. One, burnout in the sense that, you know, we got to avoid becoming exhausted. Mm-hmm. Exhausted, sometimes depressed, where we're running on nothing or running on fumes. And therefore, you know, we can't even physically and mentally kind of approach things, but it takes a lot to get there. So you've got to worry about, like, you've got to be careful with trying to not fear burnout as a sense of avoidance, like, oh, I must avoid this now, otherwise I might burn out. No, burnout comes from a multitude of stresses through everything. What happened after I recovered from burnout was actually going to work and continuing to be a carer, but minus the fear of what I was experiencing was enough to give me resources. I stopped fearing being with myself. Mm-hmm. That was part of what gave me the resources, and being kind to myself, having boundaries, making sure that not to feel guilty, having time to myself. That's what brought me out of this burnout and not fearing it happening again. What do you think, Drew?
I think that's really interesting. The burnout, I mean, burnout is a real thing, but if we look at burnout in like a non-disordered person or a non-anxious person, it would mean that they start to have a difficult time handling their affairs. You know, work becomes a problem. They become detached in their relationships. They just don't have the resources to do life, right? They run out of gas, if you will. in our community, the disorder community, then there's the fear of that. And maybe I think what this was Louise who sent in the question sender inner, which is a great, great way to describe her. I believe that she is even asking about that. Like, I keep going inward and like, am I burning out? How do I feel now? Is this burnout? Am I burnt out? And so I think people who suffer from burnout that aren't in the disorder community, they might know they're doing it. And then it's suddenly like, all right, I've had enough. Whereas in our context, it's checking all the time. Am I burnt out now? Is this going to burn me out? Am I burning out? How do I feel? Which probably leads to an increased chance that maybe you will experience burnout because of the load of that, the monitoring load, if you will.
Mm.
Does that make sense? I don't know if I explained that really well.
It does make sense. Also, from my experience, I'm going to do from my experience, a lot of people in our community don't actually experience burnout.
I agree.
It's mostly fear of burnout.
Yeah, I agree.
Like depression. Don't get me wrong.
It's the same thing with depression. There's more fear of depression than depression in the community.
Yeah, and but the paradox of that is that when you fear depression and you monitor all day and all that, you kind of become naturally depressed and you don't even realize it because, like, you know, you don't feel happy. You feel quite disconnected. You feel like, what's the point? But you're not actually experiencing that clinical depression that a lot of us fear. Now, some people do, you know, but I'm talking about, it's about, you've got to define what it is for you, your burnout. I find that, not, you know, it's more of the fear of burnout, the fear of being incapable, the fear of being immobile, paralyzed by exhaustion, etc. Whilst it can happen, it doesn't happen a lot in my experience. But it's, again, it's the fear is more prominent than the actual occurrence of it.
You know,
what I heard from Louise's question, though, was, yeah, more of the fear of it. So when I do have time for myself, I've noticed that I'm doing the inwards compulsion, the inwards rumination that we were talking about a couple of episodes ago. And is me doing that adding to my burnout? I would say no, because that's the time you practice being with yourself. Now, what I would advise here is that anything but rumination when you've got time to yourself, even if it's doing something physical. Well, I remember, like, when I had time to myself, I went to go and just do something that was concentrating, using my logical, but I used to go play pool with some of my friends. Okay. And yes, that's not sitting at home meditating, but it was nice. It was shifting down the gears, and that's enough. You know, and that's just for me. That's what I did. What about you, Drew?
Well, that makes sense because, I mean, going to play, socializing, you're playing pool. Maybe you're good at it. Maybe you're not. Who cares? But it's a low demand activity. There's no demand on you there. You just, whatever. You're just hanging out with your mates. I think one of the things that I would say, if I look at my experience, I don't think burnout is not something that I've ever really thought about in relation to my anxiety struggles. But if I look back at when I was struggling the most, if I look at that now, I would say that may have looked like I was burnt out because my ability to just handle life was not good. I just didn't have, you know, I didn't have a lot in the tank there. But that was more because of the anxious avoidance and the fear than it was, oh, I'm burnt out. So I'm wondering if people in our community might start to feel like, you know, well, we hear it all the time. You know, I had a really busy 3 days and now I feel like I'm feeling it. My anxiety is elevated and I'm exhausted. Am I burnt out? Can I burn out on my exposures? Well, you're afraid, and those are very difficult tasks to do, so they do put a demand on you, and you're likely tired. But I would probably have confused my state for possibly being burnt out, but I wasn't. I wasn't burnt out. I just had a diminished capacity to perform that was based more on anxious fear and constantly being in that stress state. Yeah,
that's a nice sentence. Put that in the opening.
I'll throw that in there. Yeah, I'll have to edit that in somehow. Now I have to remember that I said it.
That was a golden one.
Yeah,
I might go back and listen to that again.
And I think it speaks to that fear of burnout because then, like, well, I'm in this state where I feel like I can't do anything. Is that burnout? Am I burnt out? Same thing with depression. It's so, the parallels are there. Am I depressed? Am I burnt out?
And that does apply to a lot of people in this community. It's another iteration. It's another dress up of the what if I lose control fear.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
Yeah. What if I burn out? Because if I'm burnt out, I can't function. And what if I can't function? I'll never get better. I'm going to never get better. I lose control. And what if I never lose control? And then I can't. And I don't. It's a bit like the depression versus fear of depression thing we did many moons ago.
Yeah. Even the sleep. Yeah. I think it relates to sleep. If I don't sleep enough, then I won't be optimized to recover.
If there's a thing that consumes me?
Yep.
And I'm always looking out for things that are taking away my control.
Yep.
And that can be what burnout is. I reiterate though, burnout is subjective to a lot of, so for some people it's exhaustion, mm-hmm. chronic fatigue,
yep.
Complete lack of concentration. We should do a bit about what it looks like.
Yeah.
Appetite's gone, brain fog, which we did an episode on. You know, you get loads of brain fog as part of a whole cocktail of burnout.
Yep.
Loss of libido, your digestion's completely gone all over the place. You just feel exhausted a lot of the time. You feel like you're running on 10% as yeah. opposed to what you usually run on.
I think when I approach burnout now, like from the perspective of a recovered person, now I can see burnout. And like some of the signs of burnout for me would be I get a little bit irritable. Sometimes I get a lot irritable. I start to isolate. I don't want to talk to anybody. I don't want to make decisions. Like, please don't ask me what I want for dinner. I'm just done. Like, I don't give a crap what dinner is, you know? So that's what it sort of looks like for me.
Wow, you sound like a real ass.
Oh, yeah, I'm a joy to be around. So, I mean, I try not to let that happen, but those
leave me alone. Right. Leave I'm me alone. Badass.
America. That's what we do here. I think it's that situation where, for me now as a recovered person, I can clearly see burnout. And it is subjective. Yeah. You know, so my burnout is going to look different than yours. It isn't a clinical term. Like, this person is diagnosed with burnout.
Yeah, that's important. It's not a clinical term. And it's the unknown. And remember, when you're anxious, the anxious brain is drawn to the unknown, mm-hmm. you know, just like our ancestors needed it for. You know, we need to kind of speculate about the unknown to keep us safe, to keep us one step ahead of danger. What's this burnout that I keep reading about? You know, I keep seeing articles on LinkedIn about burnout. I keep seeing things in the national press about burnout, how to avoid burnout. You must avoid burnout. But if you actually read each and every single case, their burnout is different. And my advice to people listening to this is don't fear it, because there will be times in life where it will push you near the edge, but you will still function and live with burnout. That's the, I went through a very stressful year and a half of my life looking after my brother and working in a school for children who were expelled from mainstream education. Great job. And it was a privilege to look after my brother. Extremely exhausting. And yeah, burnout for me was probably just having nothing in the social tank, no enthusiasm to do other things because I was running and using my 10-20%. I was probably burnt out for months.
Yeah.
And then throw the anxiety disorder on top of it. But I didn't become this completely immobile, non-functional being.
Right.
I just was not optimal. So I had to have a lot of rest and things like that. I think the question, and forgive me if I've missed the mark here, but I think the question is, I'm afraid that my rumination is going to make me worse.
Yeah. How do I stop? She definitely wanted to know, well, how do I stop going inwards? I feel like I'm going inwards too much to check on my state.
Mm. And we've banned playing the inwards compulsion music. Now.
Yeah, we're not doing that. You guys are all done with that. Clearly. I want to hit the button so bad. But
no, don't do it. Don't press the button.
Don't do it. We're past that. Yeah.
But this podcast has integrity.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, does it? That's cool.
Yeah.
That's good news.
Yeah.
And I think it's really hard. I do get it because it's the same thing. How do I stop thinking that I won't get better? How do I stop thinking that I'm not sleeping enough? How do I stop thinking that I might be depressed? You can't stop thinking that. So, Louise, if you're listening or anybody who's concerned about what if I'm getting burnt out, it's okay to have the worry about the burnout. I keep thinking that I might be burnt out or I might accidentally burn out. And if I keep thinking that if I burn out, that I'm never going to get better. Okay, well, then think that. That's okay. What do you do with that thought is the thing. That's always the thing.
Yeah. I think it's important to look at as well. I often use the stress jug analogy. We've used it a few times where and this is a really, really important kind of definition of the stress jug, and people misinterpret it. I use the stress jug analogy to explain why we get panic attacks or disordered anxiety, where it comes from. People ask me where it comes from. And an amalgamation, an accumulation of stresses throughout life, normal, everyday, conventional stresses, things like being a carer, trauma, grief, money worries, job, physical health, mental health, breakups, your sports team losing, whatever, you forgot to put the bins out. It all builds up and builds up and builds up and overflows. When it overflows, that's a metaphor for the amygdala going, I don't understand why you're so stressed. Have a load of adrenaline and cortisol, and that ain't gonna be, I think I'm being helpful, but it's not. And that's when we experience the DPDR and all these things and all these symptoms that we begin to fear.
Yep.
And then meanwhile, all those other stresses do get solved. So you do put the bins out, you do these things, you've done the emails at work, but your jug's still full. Yeah, because the fear of the symptoms and the fear of fear itself keeps filling up the jug.
Mm-hmm.
So what I want you to do is realize that I use the jug analogy because just to explain why, but don't fear the jug overflowing, because the way out and to empty the jug is to stop fearing what happens when it overflows. It's just an explanation to tell you why it's happening, because for me that helped. I just thought I was broken, and actually, no, it wasn't. Some people with burnout can conflate the jug analogy or a similar kind of analogy like that to burnout. Oh, I mustn't let my jug fill up. Well, try your best not to let it fill up, but the goal here is to realize you will cope even if it does.
Right.
And I think that applies to burnout too.
I agree. That's such a big deal when you say, like, the issue is, I love the idea that the fear means that you, the jug, the fear will occupy the empty part of the jug. It's like I used to make jokes about, you know, the big giant American gas guzzling cars that we used to make and still do to a certain, like, that gas tank can never actually be full because the minute you turn it on, it's already an eighth down. And it's the, there you go. Let's have it.
Sorry, that's two in an episode.
It's okay.
I can't not play the eagle there.
It was appropriate there. I used to make a joke all the time. Like, that car's so big that the gas tank can never actually be full. The minute you turn it on, it's immediately an eighth down. But it's the same way. So the fear of burnout but following the fear, you can't just not be afraid of it, right? So we don't just get to decide, well, let me just stop being afraid of that. You can't.
No.
And so the fear will still kick in and you'll be compelled or compulsed, if you will, to do that inward compulsion and check and see, am I burning? But so it comes down to, like, the even if means I have to roll the dice a little bit. We go back to our pentamillion gone. You know, I got to roll that dice a little bit. So what can I do? Well, I can take some practical steps to try and make sure I get some rest time and reengage with my hobbies and be social. But if I do wind up with my jug overflowing in a bit of a burnout state, well, then I'll react to that and I'll rest and I'll get through that. That's the only thing you do. The fear is really there to try and prevent the burnout that you fear so much, or the depression or whatever it is. But maybe you can't prevent it. You're almost, the thing you're trying to prevent, you're more likely to experience if you try so hard to prevent it. So this is a tough one, you know?
It is a tough one. Knowing that, and this is a mantra I apply to anything, like, you will cope even if the bad thing happens.
Yeah.
The mind and body has such an amazing ability to habituate. I've got permanent tinnitus and OCD. So imagine where my brain went when I developed tinnitus. It fixated on the tinnitus.
Tinnitus.
That side of the Atlantic. And I had tinnitus, tinnitus, and still do. But it was screaming. And in my head, I was like, this will never turn off. I'll be like this forever. Oh my God. And then I went and did some CBT for tinnitus. And actually I realized it's not the sound. Yeah, the sound's annoying. I'm afraid of the what if this makes me lose control and I can't cope.
Yeah.
And then I looked at the statistics. 98% of people completely habituate to even high levels of tinnitus with the multiple sounds going on.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay. Obviously, my anxiety was like, yeah, you're the 2%. I was like, no, I'm not. I can do this. I'm not silly.
Right.
And yet I have tinnitus now. Here's the thing, though. I've turned it into a resource. So when my tinnitus is loud, that's a little alarm bell for me to just say, oh, I'm really stressed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I should take it easy now and put myself up. So I've used it as a almost like, all right, anxiety is going to make me think that I'm going to lose control here. But now I use it as my own alarm, my own jug meter.
Yeah.
Like, oh God, yeah, I can really hear this loud in bed. Yeah, because I've been stressed time and busy recently.
Yeah, it's time to take a little break. I like that.
Yeah.
Because it becomes a productive use of it. It's funny because people who are listening now, you know, we talk about the threat response, the threat detection system in an anxious person. Forget looking for external threats like lions or muggers. The internal threat assessment is way out of kilter. That's the I won't be able to cope. So mm-hmm. I think the assessment of how much of a threat burnout, whatever that is, would be, is way askew. Like, if I get burnout, I will be reduced to a shell of myself and I will not. But no, not really. That's just you're afraid that that's because you're so sensitive to how you feel and you have no confidence in your own body and your own mind. You can't trust it anymore. You think you've been abandoned by your own body and mind. So you think anything. People get freaked out because, oh, I have the flu and I won't be able to cope with the flu or a sinus infection or anything. That burnout seems like this giant monster that's just waiting around the corner to just take you down all the way and you'll never get back up. But I think it's also important to recognize, I love how you mentioned before, when we get back to those like pop culture references to burnout. There's so many different types of burnout. Am I burnt out at work professionally? Am I burnt out creatively? How many times have we seen like, you know, musicians? That's it. I'm not touring for 2 years. I'm not making any albums for 2 years. I'm burnt out creatively. Yeah. Right. But then that person goes off and climbs mountains.
And you're jogging around Central Park.
Right, exactly.
Out with friends. Flying to Tahiti, whatever.
Yeah.
So their burnout is so important to realize that. Yes, you're so right.
It's contextual. Some people get like relationship burnout. I just need to be single for a while. Okay, that's a bit of a form of burnout too. But then the wellness sphere takes burnout as like a universal concept and maybe twists it a little bit, especially for someone with an anxious mind who has a little bit of a hard time interpreting those messages objectively.
Yeah, because when they hear burnout, they hear Lose control.
Lose control. Or being completely debilitated, which isn't necessarily the case. Yeah.
Yeah. That said, I think we should do a little LinkedIn article curation here for actual things and tips to help people to kind of not burn out. You know, we're an anxiety podcast and we're here to help.
Yeah.
But I think the first place I would start as well, because you know, we're not all like, you're stoic, you can deal with everything or whatever.
Yeah.
But let's just like my first tip. Let's have a tip off.
Okay.
My first tip for burnout is to give yourself permission. One of the most strongest, most powerful words for me personally, anyways, permission to stop, go easy, and have time for yourself, whether it's 5 minutes or 5 weeks.
Mm. That's a good tip. I don't have a tip. I'm going to take that tip. I need to take that
Yeah,
tip.
You need to.
I said I got to record this episode and then listen to it. But I think one of the things that I have used as a sort of a tip to keep me out of burnout zone or make sure I don't get so stressed that I become ineffective is I try to stay connected to the things that are important to me. So I do a little like values journaling every month. I prompt myself to connect to a few of my values. I'm like, oh, how am I servicing these core values? Because it makes me realize that like, well, recording 16 podcast episodes in 2 weeks has nothing to do with what's valuable to me. I like to do it, but staying connected to the things that I value is a good anti-burnout tool for me, believe it or not, because it helps me make good decisions that are good for me and feed my like soul. I can't believe I said feed my soul in this podcast.
We've said the word journey a few times as well.
Every once in a while it's going to happen, guys. Okay.
That's a very good answer and really good tip. Oh, okay. Another tip for burnout. Sometimes I do it in here is that I draw a giant receptacle, 2D, big jug, flask, pan, whatever you want to use. Mm-hmm. And I write down all my stresses in the jug and I circle the ones that I can take out the easiest. So things like, you know, I should ring my sister or, you know, I should iron my clothes or, you know, I should respond to that really boring email or maybe I should make up with that friend who I've fallen out with. because that will start easing stresses. You carry all that stuff and resentment around with you. And look at what can be taken out there. Maybe, you know what, I've been holding on to grief for a long time. Maybe I should talk to someone about it. You know, because trust me, holding on to stuff in the long run,
yeah,
as opposed to feeling, you know, intense emotions in the short run, you know, it's way worse. And that will contribute to burnout more than, you know, if you're walking around lumbered with things that you haven't spoken about, you know, that's gonna weigh you down and contribute to this subjective and contextual version of burnout that we're discussing.
Because if you can carry 100 pounds and you're already automatically always have 40 pounds in your arms, then you can only carry 60 pounds because you're carrying all the other stuff beforehand. That's really good. I like that too, because that is like turning a bit of rumination into a plan. Like I can just let it swirl around in my head endlessly with no purpose or no resolution, or I can actually see if I can put it on paper and prioritize. And you know what? I'm going to call my friend today. Like, I love that.
Yeah.
One of my anti-burnout tips, or like just good, you know, self-care, if you want to call it tips, is I have a fun, this is going to sound ridiculous, but it literally is a fun routine. Like in my to-do list every day, I have a couple of things: read, listen, chill. They're not demands. It's not like I have to check, okay, let me chill. Okay, check off the chill box. It's not that. They're just always reminders and at the top of the to list every day automatically.
It's like a more tasteful version of live, laugh, love.
A little bit, yeah. So every day it's like, oh, I'm going to listen to a new record today that I've never heard. And I'm going to make sure I take 30 minutes at the end of the day to do that. I'm going to read a few pages of something I've never read before. They're just ways to disconnect from the things that would otherwise fuel stress and load. So, yeah.
My final tip would be do something that you know enjoy. That Craig the critic hates you doing.
Yeah.
It's Craig the critic.
He doesn't want you going there.
No. So do it anyway.
You know what? And some of that is taking a risk. We always talk about rolling the dice. Take a risk at being selfish today. Go ahead. Be selfish. Be self-centered. Do something you enjoy.
Oh, yeah. I like that. That's a lot. Super, we're turning risky, into a wellness podcast.
Ooh, yes. Ooh, I love it.
Always wanted it.
This episode brought to you by wellness, Kombucha.
Talking of wellness, We had an audio did it anyway.
Yeah, let's play that.
And then
really
we got
good.
A couple of questions.
All right, we'll take some questions. Let's play our audio did it anyway.
Hi, Drew and Josh. I had a major win that I wanted to share for your did it anyway. About 2 years ago, I had really started to be in the depths of my panic disorder and agoraphobia. And at that time, I had one of the worst panic attacks and experience I ever had at an auditorium watching my son perform in a talent show. That was a horrible experience 2 years ago, and I went back to the same place just last night and was able to sit through a two-hour performance and really had very minimal symptoms, and really just doing it anyway every day has really paid off very slowly but surely, and it feels really good. So thank you for what you do. Really, like, you guys gave me the, like, final push. I'm getting a little teary-eyed. it's just has really helped me, so thank you.
It's the wrong sound effect. This one.
That's amazing.
Yeah, let's get rid of the crickets.
Well done. You're making me tear up there.
I know. That was really great.
Well done to your son in the talent show. I initially heard that as he was doing a whole two-hour performance. I was like, is your son a techno DJ? That's amazing.
My son is Deadmau5.
Yeah. Well done. That's incredible. Do you know what I love about that? You went back.
Yeah.
Oh.
Back to the scene of the crime is hard in this community, right? I went back there.
So good. You went back and you nailed it. So good. And well done to your son as well for being in the talent show and having a supportive mother who's there to cheer him on.
Yeah. Got some questions?
We've got some questions.
I got one.
Yeah.
I'll read.
Yeah, have you got one?
Yeah, I got one. I have a question from Nick who says, hi, guys. You can use my name. I was listening to the Inward Compulsion episode. Ooh, I want to hit the button. And I can relate easily. My question is on being a police officer. I find in my job, I have to go back to the ancestral instinct of what's around the corner, etc., to try and be safe. Makes sense. How do I eliminate that in my civilian life where I'm not always on and worrying about the evil in the world? Thank you, and you guys have helped me greatly. Well, you're welcome, Nick. Thanks for the questions. Good question. What do you think about that?
That's a really good question. Mm-hmm. The very first paragraph, and this is not just a shameless plug, but the very first paragraph of my book, And How Does It Make You Feel, starts with when people are invested in particularly like emotional jobs, it's very hard to turn off. Mm-hmm. You know, even, and I explain how therapists try to do it, and it's like, you can't fully turn it off. So yeah, it's part of your job, and it's probably what makes you good at your job. My advice would be to be like, okay, step one is notice it. Brilliant. So you've noticed it. So you're not this person who's completely unaware of it. And then step two, just practice gently switching between these modes. Are you ever going to turn it off? No. So don't try to make that the success criteria, but just gently and compassionately say, right, you know, I'm a police officer. You know, I do this many hours a week. I'm not surprised that it happens now when I'm trying to live my own life, but I'm going to just gently practice switching between the two.
Yeah.
And this applies to all kind of, particularly frontline services, paramedics, doctors, nurses, stuff like that. It's just about being kind to yourself and gently practicing with that attention and just being like, oh, notice that I'm in meerkat mode here. Not at work now. Don't need to be.
Yeah. I would not try to, I love your advice. Don't try to turn it off, because I don't think you can. And then you also have to ask yourself, how much impact is this having on my life? Right. We always care. Like, we would not want to treat somebody, you know, for some sort of problem if the problem actually isn't causing any significant level of impact or restriction or distress for them. So you have to look at that. If this is causing you a huge amount of distress, it's causing you problems, and your life has become very restricted or governed by this, yeah, then you might want to focus more on the problem and talk about, do some of the stuff that Josh was talking about. But if it's just a minor annoyance, you might not even really have to turn it off that much. The only thing I would add to that would be like maybe a little routine that says, okay, now I'm off. When meerkat mode gets activated, which it's gonna, I can't stop it. I follow new rules now because I'm off duty, and now I just let that fear be there, and I go about my business as best I can. Good question, though.
It's a good question. Thank you, and thanks for tuning in. Mm. I've got a question here, Drew.
Sure.
And if we've got time, there's a written did it anyway.
Okay.
Here's a question. Hello, Disordered. I have a question. What about positive ruminations? Sometimes when I'm out on a walk, my mind will roam freely. It sometimes reminds me of pleasant times, creative ideas, and has even been known to make me laugh. With a big emphasis on present mind focus within this community, would it be wise to keep bringing my attention back to the present, even when I'm actually enjoying where my mind is taking me? Hope that makes sense. Feel free to use my name. Thanks, Dan. What a question.
That's a great question.
And it's going to be a short answer.
Yeah.
That's
you win. Yeah. You win.
Just keep doing. Yeah. Just keep doing what you're doing, man.
Yeah. That's exactly what, like, yes. When we say things like, or when I remember when Martin Seif was on my podcast a long time ago on The Anxious Truth, and he said, you know, human brains are capable of producing beautiful things, but also crap. That's the beautiful things. Take it. Take the part. You got it. You got the first part.
Stop it, Dan. Just do it. Yeah. You win.
You win.
That's it. If you're walking around smiling, reminiscing, reflecting, creatively using that part of your brain that gets neglected so much and ignored because the anxious part of it takes over. No, you win. You've won. That's it. You've done it. You're out there. Brilliant. I was sat in a cafe the other day and I was imagining, do you remember we spoke about the taxi company?
Yes, what would I name my cab company?
I was thinking of something like just something stupid like that. And I was really enjoying it. That was it. I was fantasizing about owning an otter sanctuary and what I would call it. Would it be not for profit? Whatever. I'm just, and it was just absolute nonsense. And I was smiling and laughing and imagining it. I win. I'm not thinking about how I feel. I'm not compulsing. I'm not ruminating. I'm not applying perfectionistic tendencies to recovery. I win. Dan, you win.
Yeah.
No, you don't need to do that.
I would say I will add this to step on you for a second. Even if you went out with the intention of doing like a present mindfulness walk and you wind up doing that, fantasizing and reminiscing and enjoying old song lyrics in your head, still winning.
Yeah, that's such a good point.
Let it happen.
I've gone to mindfulness meditation classes, and then 10 minutes in, I'm just laughing at a joke my friend told me like the other day. I'm still winning. Yeah, I'm probably not training my focus is bad. But who cares? If you're smiling, you're winning.
Right, exactly. Yeah. I was hoping to win $100, and damn it, I win $1,000. Like, no one would say that. So, you know, yeah, good job, Dan. Thanks for the question.
That's really good. That's almost like a did it anyway. It's like, no, Dan, leave it alone.
Yeah.
I will finish on this did it anyway. Yeah. Hashtag did it anyway. Hey, Josh and Drew, I know you hear this a lot, but I've been in therapy for a long time, and this podcast, your books, and a few other podcasts have helped me so much. This week, I have driven in 3 different places that have scared me so badly as both passenger and driver. I heard the doubt and remembered what you guys said about my brain just doing what it's supposed to do by filling me with doubt out of protection. I kept repeating to myself, doubt is not danger, and just went for it. I'm also 9 months pregnant, and the thought of doing this for my healing and for my daughter to have the strong mother that I really am means everything. Mm. Next step is the highway, a couple little bridges that have me spooked, and just one thing at a time, all the time. Thank you for helping me, us, all of us. Thank you very much. And this was sent in a few months ago, so we want to hear the update there. Did you get on the highway? Is the kid all right? Mm. How's motherhood? Feel free to send us a message on disordered.fm. We'd love to hear from you, or even a voicemail.
Yeah, absolutely. We read them all. We try to, at least, and listen to them all. We can't always get them on the air, but we try to get to all of them. So, well done. Yeah. That gets a little applause for sure. That's a value-driven did it anyway. I want to be better, and I want to be a good mom. So I took a risk. Did some scary stuff.
Excellent. Keep them coming in, guys. Disordered.fm.
Yep.
If you don't follow us on social media, I am at Anxiety Josh. Andrew is at the.anxious.truth. Feel free to sign up to the Disordered mailing list. Thank you to all those that have pre-ordered my latest book, which is out incredibly soon. Really excited for it. And also you've got the resources, Drew's books, my self-help books. Or just don't even think about anxiety for a bit and go off and do what Dan's doing. Because he's the hero of the podcast.
I like that plan. Turn this off and go do something that is important to you that you like. Take a risk.